With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Rouleau podcast. I'm Ian Parkinson, and in this edition, we'll be looking forward to the 2018 pro cycling season. I'm joined by Rouleau editor Andy McGrath, executive editor Ian Cleverley, and Peredur Ap Gwynedd, who many of you may know as the guitarist from the band Pendulum. Peri, shemai, croeso y podledad.
Wow, ti'n siarad Cymraeg. Diolch yn fawr iawn, diolch.
Well, you're not here, just in case people are wondering, because of your guitar playing skills. Actually, because you're a big cycling fan, but also you've done a lot of commentary and coverage of the Tour de France in the Welsh language for S4C.
That's right, yeah. We've done 4 years now at the Tour. So the first one was when the Tour started in Yorkshire back in 2014. That was the first one, because I got a phone call from a friend of mine who works for a production company in Wales and said, "You like cycling, don't you?" I went, "Yeah." "Oh, we're putting a pitch together," he said, for the Tour de France in Welsh on S4C. I was like, "Right." He said, "Do you mind if we put your name with the pitch?" And I said, "Yeah, all right then." And then six weeks later, he calls me back and said, "Do you remember we had that chat?" I went, "Yeah." "Well, we got it. What are you doing in July?" And I was like, "Oh my God." So obviously never done any commentary at all or anything like that ever.
So how did you find it?
It was okay. I was there on the ground for the first 3 days. We weren't commentating live from the finishing line, obviously, but I was there co-presenting from the finishing line.
So you're not just doing it from some studio in Cardiff?
It's a bit of both. So we were there actually in Yorkshire, just as, well, hey, we're here type of thing. And now we're actually there on the ground for about 10 days for the whole lot. You know, the rest of it is in the studio, but it was a lot of fun. It was really, really nerve-wracking, especially the first day, because it was myself, it was my brother as well, he's a professional bass player, plays for Katie Tunstall. So and then there was a couple of other guys, Griff Lewis from who's now with Ribble Pro Cycling, and we were like, we've never done any commentary before. And the main commentator, a guy called Wyn Griffith, said, who's done rugby for like 30 or 40 years, he said, "It's just four lads watching TV on a sofa, a couple of beers," although there wasn't any beer, and "we're just having a chat about the cycling," and that's what we've done. So it's very conversational, the whole thing, just us four having a chat here.
And has it gone down well? Is there a big following for it?
Well, yes, there is. This year is our fifth year. Now, the first contract was for 3 years. And now it's been renewed for another 3 years, so we'll be halfway through that this July. So they seem to like it, which is quite nice.
I suppose it's helped that you've had Geraint the past few years in the Tour.
Yes, and Geraint's wife Sarah is with us for the first couple of years as well on the team. So and Geraint and Luke, and obviously hopefully Owain Dool and have Scott Davis, who's with Dimension Data. There's a lot of Welsh people in the peloton now, and Owain and Scott actually speak Welsh as well. So whenever we get to interview them, they do it in the Welsh language. Well, especially with Geraint winning the time trial in Dusseldorf last year, you know, that was really special for us. You know, Welshman winning a stage of the Tour de France for the first time and actually finishing up in the yellow jersey, we were like, "Oh, this is quite handy."
So how impartial do you Welsh boys on a sofa stay when there's a Welshman winning?
We were very, very, no. I went nuts. I was actually there in Dusseldorf, and I was like, I couldn't actually speak. I was just, I'd been waiting for this thing my whole entire life. And it's happened, and I'm there speaking live into a microphone in front of a camera to Wales, and I'm going, it was very unprofessional about the whole thing, but it was just like, you know, I was there trying to stop the tears from rolling down my face, going,
And how is the Welsh language as a commentary language for cycling?
Well, it's not that, it's, we've had to, there's technical terms, of course, you know, like there's a breakaway, and it's called a dihangiad. What else is there? There's a skeelwint, which is a slipstream. We've had to think of different technical terms for brand new things, you know, things that you wouldn't, you know, like a breakaway. If you said that out of the context of cycling, it wouldn't make any sense. You know, slipstream would, because with cars, you know. But we've had to think of new terms, which has been really
interesting. There are some technical terms that actually don't translate. You know, much like in French, you know, you get
yes.
things like picnic
yes.
pop up and other yeah. words that are
absolutely
recognized.
But we try to use as much Welsh as possible. So a lot of the words that we use have been made up, especially for the Tour de France. You know, and now. And they're online already saying that this term was first used in 2015 on the Tour de France.
So you're creating a language as you go along, words as you go along.
Yeah, well, technical terms as we go along, yeah. The words are already there, but used in context, we've made them up. Yeah.
You said that you've been waiting your whole life for a Welshman to win a stage of the Tour. So presumably you've been into cycling for a long time then?
Yeah, I used to love it as a kid. You know, I just remember watching it on TV, you know, and I remember somebody had an Eddie Merckx. Remember those Eddie Merckx yellow orange bikes with the 5-speed, and you know, somebody had one of those, and you know, I had my rally chopper, and it's like, oh, I wish I had something with drop handlebars, you know. So cycling was quite big in Wales back when I was a kid. Then kind of rock and roll took over then. But about 10-12 years ago, I stopped smoking. That was and I started swimming, and I started running, and just to get fit again. But it was so bored doing those two sports, just dull as hell. So I went on holiday with my wife, and we just hired a couple of mountain bikes. And I was like, oh yeah, I remember this. So it's like being a kid again. So came home, went straight to my local bike shop, bought a bike, and that was it. Back into the cycling again. So, yeah, and never look back, really.
Okay, well, I said we were going to be looking ahead to the 2018 season. Of course, it's already underway, isn't it? As we record this, the women's tour down under is just finishing, and the men's is about to get underway. Tour down under is sort of under-regarded a bit, really, isn't it? We tend to forget about it.
Yeah, who's going to win this year is the big question, I
Richie
suppose.
Port.
It's just kind of picking Australian who's in form. It always seems to be one of them, doesn't it?
Nathan Haas, everybody seems to be throwing his name in the mix.
I actually think it probably won't be very popular with our Aussie listeners, but it gets almost disproportionate amounts of attention because half the fans have been waiting for the road cycling season to recommence for so long. And when it's finally here, it's all the new kits. It's all these new riders who are on new teams, which we were just saying we won't realise for the next 6 months, you know. But it is exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, and you normally get a good turnout of riders, isn't it? The teams take it seriously.
Yeah, it's 20th year, which I didn't realise. It's been going on for that long. Sagan's there, isn't he? On form. He's already won, so...
Yes, Sagan already won a sort of one-day race or something, didn't he?
The crit, yeah. But the curse of the rainbow jersey, it clearly doesn't exist, not with him anyway.
Doesn't apply to Sagan.
It was an amazing finish of that final. It was just like, he was so wily. You know, he beat Greipel and Caleb Ewan, you know, both natural sprinters.
It was, it was a proper crit, wasn't it?
Wow.
Not one of those Belgian crits.
Yeah,
they were actually racing.
They were.
It was special that day, I thought.
They crashed, like, in the finale, so it was definitely a proper crit, yeah. Pretty
brutal.
Went
into the barriers and took off the barriers out with him.
But he almost kept it up. Yeah. So I was kind of praying, like, come on, you can do this. No, it went down in the end. Never mind.
We'll talk about the classics in a bit, because I guess that's the... Those are the first big races on European soil. But I guess across the whole year, the sort of big elephant in the peloton is Froome, isn't it? And whether he's going to be around for the Giro and the Tour. And because, of course, he's got this adverse analytical finding hanging over him, may not be riding anything for a while. Whatever your thoughts on the circumstances, it's not an ideal start to the season, really, is it?
It's not good for the credibility of the sport. That was really kind of, it's been a bit rocky over recent years, but whatever happens with Froome, that's going to be, the sport's fighting for that credibility this season. It'll be interesting. It's an interesting change to the dynamic of the whole season because, you know, Contador retired, so did Boonen and Cancellara in the last 2 years, and we may not even have Froome in the Giro or in the Tour. It could be a season of kind of renewal of some fresh hopes, winning the biggest races.
Because it's not clear what's going to happen to Froome, is it? I mean, my understanding from reading everything that's been written, and Lord knows there's been enough written about it, is that, yeah, effectively, he's almost guilty until he proves himself innocent. So he could well, it kind of depends on how long him and the Sky lawyers can string it out for.
Well, he's probably in a lab in somewhere in Switzerland as we speak, trying to get that, was it 2,000 micrograms per whatever in his blood, you know, right now, just by inhaling. Because if they find out that you can only get that amount by injecting or by ingesting the thing, then he's in trouble, isn't he? So,
yeah, I mean, at best, and I say this, you know, at best, this is a massive cock-up by Team Sky, really, isn't it? And that's putting a good gloss on it, really.
Latest in a series of cock-ups, let's face it.
This is a team who are supposed to, you know, micromanage every aspect of their riders' lives and training, and they don't seem to be able to manage their, if, you know, at best, they don't seem to be able to manage their star riders' asthma medication.
And they've given the Sky haters, and let's face it, there's plenty of them, lots of ammunition. It's kind of hard to argue with that, isn't it?
Yeah. So we could be looking at a Giro without Froome. We could be looking at a Tour without Froome. Or we could be looking at Froome riding the Giro, I suppose, but then not the Tour. It's going to be an intriguing few months, isn't it?
I think Dumoulin, is he doing the Giro this year?
Yes, he said is. He has, yeah, yeah.
He's a man, isn't he, really, who could be taking over the mantle. I think it's make or break for Richie Porte. And not literally break either, because, you know, he's been in so many crashes. But he's kind of getting old in terms of a favourite for the Tour de France. I think he's got one or two good years left. And if he can stay upright, and if Froome isn't there at the Tour, you might say he'd be the favourite.
Guerin's working for him now as well, isn't he? So he's got a little bit stronger team than he had. Well, as you said, crashing. He keeps on crashing out of various races, you know.
Yeah.
He has to learn to keep the bike upright, really, and keep his bones intact.
And stay off the Toblerone. Because I went to see him in Monaco, and people have been giving him loads of chocolate when he was kind of down and out. Poor guy, but yeah.
I saw him the other week. He was skinny as anything.
Oh, great. There you go.
Don't you worry.
Whether Froome does ride the Giro or not, the Giro this year will be beginning in Israel, which, in a long list of pretty crap cycling decisions, that's really not looking one of the best, is it?
In lots of respects. The latest one was when Trump, of all people, stuck his oar in the mix. And
made Jerusalem the capital.
Exactly. And, you know, the ramifications of that appear to be, you'd think that President of the United States could fire off a dumbass tweet, you know. Well, surprise.
Yeah, exactly what he said, you know, and you've got Bahrain, Merida and UAE, you know, it's like with him, you know, stirring at the hornet's nest once more, you know, can those two teams race the Giro? You know, is it going to be too dangerous out there for them?
I think in general, some people might say that sport and politics don't mix, but in a sport like cycling that isn't kept to a stadium or a court that goes across a whole country, I don't see the truth in that statement. Like, of course they're combined, they're intimately combined, because to organise a massive bike race, you need that political side. As Christian Prudhomme will tell you at the Tour de France, you need to have these local politicians all the way down to the tiniest councillors on your side at certain points.
Well, for all the gloss they put on it, you know, coming from Israel's side, it's an attempt to normalise Israel's standpoint, and that's contentious straight away, you know.
So let's talk about the classics. And there's one thing that this year will be missing from the Belgian classics, and I'll play it to you now. Probably the most annoying jingle in the world, but it's absolutely, if you've ever been to a Belgian race, not just the classics, but or watched it on the telly, it's absolutely part of the atmosphere, isn't it? And they're not going to be there this year.
Yeah, for all that, you know, they've written about Cancellara retiring, now Boonen's gone, you know, there's this big vacuum. Never mind that. No Rodania.
No Rodania.
That is massive. Massive.
It's the worst jingle. I read an interview, I think it was on In a Ring, where, with the marketing bloke who came up with the jingle. And he had like a lunchtime to come up with something that fitted four syllables. And Beethoven's Fifth is, you know, out of copyright, clearly. So he just went, Rodania. And it's, you know, the best lunchtime's work he's ever done. But
I was just wondering if he's on a royalty, like the fellow who did the Channel 4 thing. Do, 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 do. It's just four notes, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
Made millions out of that. Oh. He did. Yeah.
Good little earner.
The little car with the watch on top that precedes every sort of decent Belgian race is not going to be there because the sponsorship deal has expired or whatever. So that's a shame, but hopefully the racing will be all right. Any pointers for the classics? I presume, you know, the usual figures will be in there.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Het Nieuwsblad because they have put in the old Tour of Flanders finale, the one that was there for 40-odd years. The finish will be in Meerbeke, the Mur will be 15k from the finish, and then the Bosberg and the rest of it, which normally I'm a little bit down on that first classics race of the season, but it's going to be totally different this year. I'm really amped up for it, yeah. It's going to be good. Favourites-wise, because I was having a look at who the young guns, like who might come through. I kind of like the look of Thijs Benoot, the Lotto Soudal rider. He's not been off the boil the last few years, but not quite as good as his first season. I think he's due a return to form. I think one of the Trek guys too, like Degenkolb or Jesper Stuyven, might nick a classic, even a monument, because there's definitely a space to fill in that Trek Segafredo team as leader. Now Cancellara's gone. Well, it's been a few years, hasn't it?
Yeah, Oliver Nason as well. I think it's he's there. Well, his team's been bolstered a little bit. Sylvain Dillier's gone to AG2R, so he's great in both the classics and in as a domestique and in the Grand Tours, and he's won stages. He won a stage last year at the Giro, didn't he? So he's there to help Nason and to help Bardi later on in the year. But so look out for him, I think. But Matteo Trentin, he's now with Mitchelton Scott. As I think a leader, he's been domestique with Quickstep for so many years, but it'd be very interesting to see what happens with him. You know, he's got a great team behind him. I've always loved the old Orica, the Green Edge, whatever you want to call them, but it'd be very, very interesting to see what he does. You know, he's coming back from an injury. I think he's broken a rib at the minute, but he'll be ready for the classics apparently. So
I've always expected Luke Rowe to come up with something in the classics. Just
still, you won't see him until next year, I don't think, because his injury was so bad in the summer, you know, when he broke his leg. It's, apparently it's still quite bad, so you won't see him. I doubt you'll see him this year at all, in the, doing anything of worth in the classics, at least. Yeah.
And we're still waiting for a wet Paris-Roubaix.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be good?
Oh. I just keep going back every year, because I can't possibly miss a wet one. It's been 15 years now, more than that, I think, so...
I was talking to Greg Van Avermaet last week, and he said, everybody that watches the race is always banging on about, it'd be lovely to have a wet Roubaix. And he was like, no, fine. Nice and dry and dusty. Thank you very much. That'll do for me.
Every rider would hate it. They all say that, actually, yeah. But it would look fantastic, and it would be something they'd probably remember if they get to the finish intact and all the rest.
So no Olympics this year, but... World Championships at the end of the season. And Vuelta, again, always gets forgotten a little bit, doesn't it? Overshadowed by the two other Grand Tours.
Yeah, they only announced the route at the weekend, but I had a very quick look just before coming over. Starting in Malaga, going to Marbella. So it always likes going to kind of Brit tourist-friendly locations. And I think it's going to Lagos de Covadonga, which is a iconic Spanish climb in, I think, Asturias. And it's paying a visit to Salamanca and the university there, which I think is one of the oldest in the world, but it's also a beautiful city as well. Still feels such a long way, like away though, the Vuelta. It's hard to contemplate.
And regarding, like, you know, who the heck is going to win it, stroke, ride it?
Who knows? All bets are off by this.
Who knows? You know, you don't even know till the end of the Tour de France, do you? Depending on who's had a good one, had a bad one, who missed it, yada, yada. It's just, you just have to put a big question mark next to that one till middle of the summer.
So no new teams in the Pro Tour ranks, are there? Just a few different name changes, different sponsors. A couple of continental teams that will probably get wild cards. There's a few new ones in there. But generally, it's pretty much the same as last year, isn't it?
I think Brian Crockard's got a new team. What's it called?
Well, it's Vital Concept.
That's it.
So
yeah.
It's the old Fortuné Vital Concept. It's the two sponsors just split up last year, and this will be the second year in a row that he's not riding the Tour de France, because he was Direct Energy last year, and he said that he's going to go with this new team
to ride the Tour de France. Was the intention probably at the back of his mind?
Yeah. So obviously they didn't give him a place on the team last year, and they haven't got a wild card this year. So that's 2 years in a row that one of the best French sprinters doesn't get to ride the Tour de France.
So any Frenchman with any common sense who definitely wants to ride the Tour de France should sign for Cofidis, who get a wild card every year despite being absolutely appalling.
That's right. Yeah.
If they didn't have Buani, they wouldn't have any points.
Anything else we've forgotten?
Well, the Worlds is going to be... That's an interesting course this year. It's more for the climbers, isn't it? So I was thinking, wasn't that one of the reasons that maybe Froome was going to... Well, he might still do the Giro and then the Tour and then do the Worlds and get the triple, like Stephen Roach did.
It's meant to be like the hardest Worlds in 30-odd years, like Innsbruck, really mountainous. Finally, we'll see one for the climbers, because it's rarely for the pure climbers. Can't think of the last one. But people are saying that despite that, like Sagan is still targeting it, that he will look to be 2 kilos lighter and that he could win it, which I guess he could. That would probably be the most impressive of his four if he does manage to do that, though.
You get so used to seeing the Worlds as a race of attrition where people go out the back, not out the front, that it's one of the dullest races of the year for me.
So that's 2018 sorted out. Exciting times now, because we've got not one, but two new features on the Rouleur podcast. The first, I freely admit, is nicked from someone else. Many years ago, there was a podcast called The Real Peloton Podcast, which was presented and put together in a completely haphazard and slapdash way by Matt Rendell and Ned Bolting.
Whatever happened to them?
Yeah, I don't know. And they had a feature called Sod Off Corner, which was a bit like sort of Room 101, I suppose, i.e. it was just a chance to moan about whatever had got your goat in cycling that particular month. We were going to call it Sod Off Corner, but that is probably copyright, Matt Rendell and Ned Bolting. So we've come up with the... title Get Down, Stay Down for this feature. Are you supposed to say that in a sort of Danny Dyer voice? Or
Get Down, Stay Down.
Yeah, there's something like that. That was pretty good, actually, wasn't it?
Well, that's Welsh Cockney. I'd go more north than that, I think. Get Down, Stay Down.
We'll, I'm supposed to have a jingle for it, but I haven't quite worked out the tone for it yet. But as soon as I get the inspiration.
Can't just be us singing in different accents. Get Down, Stay Down.
So Get Down, Stay Down. It's like Room 101. Is there anything or anyone that's really narked you off in cycling? If so, this is the chance to let you steam off about it. Now, Ian, you're usually such a positive ray of sunshine about cycling. Anything been upsetting you recently?
That's right, Ian. I am very positive generally. This is actually quite an unusual one to start with, because I got sent a sort of spam email from a company making... cycle clothing, or I won't name them, making UK outdoor clothing brand, best known for supplying the emergency professionals, blah, 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 blah. Now, they have introduced a cycling jacket, high-performance storm jacket, featuring a large hood that will fit over helmets and reflective piping to ensure safety whilst on the road or mountain. Now, when
they've never ridden
school,
a bike, have they?
They've never ridden a bike. When I was at school, I was so proud to have the first snorkel jacket in the whole school. I was... the bee's knees. I, you know, but with extra snorkel. It was out here. I was like the guy off of South Park, you know.
Kenny.
Yeah. And fantastic at school. Try riding a bike. You turn your head and your head disappears inside the hood. You know, you see nothing. It's not a safety feature. It's a danger feature.
Have you pointed that out to them?
No, I just thought I'd let it go and
just put it in sod off corner or get down, stay down as we're referring to.
It can stay down.
Stay down. Okay. Andy, anything been upsetting you recently?
Well, in world of cycling, you mean?
Yeah.
Don't get me started on that. On the other stuff, it's just a kind of general moan about the over-entitlement of former pros to comment on the current scene. Because I get they are totally allowed to comment on certain aspects. They've won this race, they've won that race, they've been there. But it's when they start overegging it, like one former pro who will also remain nameless was moaning about riders going around unzipped with the jerseys unzipped. And race radios always seems to be the bugbear of a certain generation. And they will always say that it was better in their time. But it wasn't better in their time. Like, I feel the money was lower. They drove everywhere. Stayed in campaniles. More often than not, it really wasn't better. That's the thing. Like,
other budget hotels are available, by the way. No offence, Campanile.
Yeah, and they aren't sponsoring this podcast either,
no,
are they?
No. Maybe they should.
So it's just a case of balancing that a little bit more.
Moany old pros is basically what you're saying, isn't it? Moany old pros have got
being,
your goat.
Being too moany, yeah.
Get down, stay down.
Perry.
Can I say the ASO?
Yeah, go on.
Good.
Yeah, go
it's
large.
Just, it's just, oh, yeah, just La Course. It's down to one day. What on earth is going on? You know, it's not going to cost them that much more money to have a proper women's race that runs concurrently with the Tour de France. Everything's there. Everything that you need to film and broadcast a race is there. It's not going to cost them that much at all. It's going to be better for television viewers. You know, the whole thing this year about broadcasting the whole of the race, you know, you've got 6.5 hours sometimes of a long transitional stage. The first 4 hours is pointless. It's absolutely pointless. And luckily for us, we don't do the first half of the races, but you know, the other commentators do. And it's dull for them, and it's dull for the viewers as well. How about they show a women's race in that first section of the men's race? You know, it probably have to start halfway along the course, you know, along the stage. Maybe half the length of the actual men's course, but at least there will be a proper stage race for the women. You know, as we saw in the 2012 Olympics, you know, the women's race was way more exciting than the men's race, and we keep on seeing that all the time. It's just as exciting, sometimes even more exciting than the men's.
But ASO just truly don't seem to get it, do they? They really don't. They just say, you know, they shrug their shoulders and go, "Well, this isn't our responsibility," and well. Come on, you're the biggest thing in the sport. It is.
You know. Oh yeah, when they announced it's just going to be the one stage this year, and I was like, oh come on, seriously.
As much as anything, it's the sort of inconsistency, isn't it? It's the sort of messing about with the format every year, which seems to get quite rightly to women pros. The sort of ongoing disrespect for women's racing in a lot of areas is a constant downer.
I mean, coming back to Omnibhead Newsblad, it's the 13th women's edition, you know, this year, and that's what they need, more consistency. And it doesn't necessarily, I mean, and I know there's arguments within the women's sport about whether they should be piggyback on the men's races or whether it should be a standalone event, and I think there's pluses and minuses in both, and I think there's room for both. But I think the women love riding races like that in front of big crowds, but they also love having their own stand events, like, you know, the women's tour over here is as good as they get, isn't it? But you know, hats off to Het Nieuwsblad for doing that for 13 years, and it'd be nice to see some more, you know, Paris-Roubaix again, ASO, isn't it?
Bottom line is there is nothing stopping that. There is a way around it. If they wanted a women's Paris-Roubaix, and really they need it, because almost every other monument has some kind of women's race. Not you want to be tokenist, but still, there should be one.
There's an under-23 Paris-Roubaix. There's a junior Paris-Roubaix.
There's a sportive as well.
There's, yeah, several sportives, and yet there's no women's. Come on.
That all makes mine my moan sound a bit pathetic, really. But I'll say it anyway. Every winter, when you go out in weather like today, and you know today has been a pretty shocking British winter day, you see people on Pinarello Dogmas with their deep carbon wheels and their skinny racing tyres riding round in the rain. What is wrong with these people? What is wrong with them? What's wrong with mudguards? What's wrong with riding a 65-inch fixed all winter like I do? You know, that's...
Maybe they haven't got very much money and they can't afford a second bike.
Yeah, no? They spent it all on the Pinarello Dogma, you mean.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so that's our moaning. If you're listening to this and there's something that you really want to get off your chest, cycling-related preferably, you can mail us podcast@ruleur.cc. And we'll read out the best of them and discuss them on the next podcast. Another brilliant innovation we're trying out for the first time is Stuart Clapp's Tech Corner. Note to self, that needs a snappier title. We're asking our tech and kit fanatic, Stuart Clapp, who is editor of Ruleur Desire, to keep us up to date with the latest in bike and clothing developments and report to us from his high-tech laboratory in deepest Leon C. Are you there, Stu?
I am indeed. I was looking out the window. I was looking at ships going past, actually. It's a glorious setting in Leon C, which isn't Southend.
Of course not, no.
It's just down the road.
What have you been playing with this week, Stu?
This week, I've been mostly wearing the Chapter 3 JJ jacket. It came in a little while ago, and I really liked it. Chapter 3 do things that aren't... I mean, they kind of have a little bit more haute couture about them. And with the JJ, it's like... I'll need to explain it because obviously people are going to be listening to this and might not. So it looks like a 1980s diving jacket.
What, like a wetsuit?
Yeah, like a wetsuit. It was modelled on Sean Connery. I was talking to the guys from the brand actually at the Ruleur Classic, and they were saying about how it was designed on Sean Connery's wetsuit jacket that he wore in Thunderball. I think his was red. This is grey. But it's like, yeah, it's even got an oversized zip on it. So it's like, it really is, it's not just a passing resemblance to it. I've worn it to the cafe and people have gone in and gone, is that a wetsuit jacket?
Is that a good thing? Do you want people to think you're wearing a wetsuit down the cafe?
Well, yeah. I don't know whether that's the narcissistic sports pimp in me. It's a bit unusual. It's a bit unusual, and it's a bit of a talky point. Guys you ride with get a new bit of kit, and it goes completely unnoticed. We like, you know, black and white. Oh, right, brilliant. Yeah, you've got a new piece of kit. You've got this. But it's not a talking point. This jacket is a proper tool, like this jacket or jersey. They've said that you can use it for both. And it's actually, it's a really cool bit of kit. And for Chapter 3, it's not ridiculously expensive. It's £200, so it's like a sort of I've been wearing it a lot now where it's been, you know, if it hasn't been raining or hasn't been like freezing cold, it's that good intermediate jacket. I think it's really cool. It's got three pockets on the back, which is handy because I know some of the stuff they haven't, and a pocket on the front, which I haven't worked out what I'm going to put in there yet. I don't know. Snacks.
What else have you been enthusiastic about this week? I know you were you're talking earlier about some sunglasses.
Yeah, I was. Yeah. Obviously, we get your usual suspects. You know, the stuff that you see in the magazine. We get, you know, from the likes of Rafa, Castelli, all the different brands in. But one of the other aspects of my job, which I really enjoy doing, is looking for brands that perhaps people haven't seen or yet, and which is quite nice. We had the kit from Warsaw in a little while ago. And one of the things that I found, but I mean, there are lots of independent small clothing brands and stuff setting up all the time. But I saw a sunglass brand a little while ago called Alba Optics. it's just, I really like the brand. I think it's quite cool. And the lenses are like, but not too dissimilar from, say, an, like some of the original, like some of the 80s Oakley stuff, or like the 100% stuff, you know. It's like, it's quite oversized. And the frames look kind of, I don't know, they look fairly cheap. But I think that's what kind of makes them cool. They don't look overproduced.
You're not really selling this to us, Stu.
Ah, see, the thing, well, this is it. There's something like, again, it's one of those things that when you wear them, people go, what sunglasses are those?
People say, what have you got on your face?
What? Yeah. Well, they're almost like petrol station chic, right? You know, you can go in there and like find these sunglasses that, you know, you go, look at those. Who would buy those? Well, actually, I would, because they look like these Alber Optics. But the lens is fantastic. But the whole design is just, quirky, I think, is a word I'm after. There's a black pair, is a really fluorescent pink one. But one of my favourite colour, they've done like a lime and yellow one, which reminds me of jelly snakes. And I've got a real thing about jelly snakes, because when I was younger, there's a fond memory is that I used to take this dog, my dog, for a walk, my sister's dogs, over the back of the house, and we used to go to this place called Ann's Mini Mart, right?
Well, I'm sorry, we seem to be losing contact with Stuart there. He's off on one of his jelly snake rants again.
Stu, you there? Stu?
No, I think we've lost him. Okay, thanks a lot, Stu. Anyway, the narcissistic sports pimp will be back in a couple of weeks' time with another trip round the technical cupboard.
I think that's why I like that colourway. I think the jelly snake thing is speaking to me.
That's pretty much it from this podcast. Join us again in a couple of weeks. Thanks to Ian Cleverly, Andy McGrath, and, of course, to Peridir Ap Gwynedd. Catch up soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.